Over the last few years of working in crypto, I've accrued more NFTs and altcoins and random crypto assets than I can count, across more chains than I can remember, and it's always been a struggle to find a single crypto wallet where I can track everything I own. That is, until I discovered Zarian. Zarian Wallet is for everything you own on-chain. Yes, that includes all of your assets across more than 14 different networks. Zarian is giving people the chance to be true owners by making it simple to explore, collect, mint, test, and contribute to the new internet. Go to zarian.io/download today to take ownership over your on-chain assets, available on iOS, Android, and desktop. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Rehash, a Web3 podcast. I'm your host, Diana Chen, and today we're speaking with Gabriel, founder of Mochi, a coordination game for autonomous worlds. AI and blockchain are two buzzwords anyone operating remotely adjacent to the tech space has been hearing a lot of in recent years, but we haven't heard much of these two concepts operating together. Gabriel believes that there's actually a strong case for AI and blockchain to operate together, and in this episode, he shares why he believes blockchain and crypto can have a strong impact on AI, and provides a plethora of fascinating examples and future use cases for the two to interoperate. We then get into a discussion about autonomous worlds, how Gabriel defines them, what they unlock, and why they might be the next evolution of DAOs. We haven't really talked much about autonomous worlds on Rehash in the past, probably in big part because it's still a relatively new concept. But one conversation that does come to mind is season 5, episode 5 with Peter Pan, which was all about on-chain world building. And we did get into autonomous worlds a little bit in that episode. I think it could be interesting to go back and listen to that episode from July 2023 and see how the thinking around autonomous worlds has developed over the last 7 months. Gabriel was nominated by Maz and voted onto the podcast by Maz, Iman, Ninty Nick, Spencer Graham, and Triumph. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Gabriel. All right. Well, Gabriel, thank you so much for joining Rehash. Welcome.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm so excited to talk to you about all things on-chain AI. I can't say we've had any episode in the past on this topic, and I love that we're bringing together two buzzwords that's been circulating in the tech space, AI and blockchain/crypto. I actually haven't really thought about the intersection of these two very much, but I know that's something that you've thought about a lot, so I'm really excited to talk to you all about that. I guess to start off, I'm just curious to hear, high level, how do you think about these two technologies, AI and blockchain, coming together, and what results from this?
Oh yeah, let's start with the hard questions first. Great. Hi everyone. it's a big question. It is a huge question, and the way that I can like maybe sum it up is blockchain is money tech, AI is god tech. These two technologies were like relegated to the kind of priestly class, I think, throughout history, and now everybody can play with them. If it was states or priestly people that had access to these kind of higher forms of coordinating knowledge and information, you start to have the possibility of building whole new worlds, right? At your fingertips with your crew online, something like that. So I fundamentally think these tools are like, you know, the next frontier of world building, exercise, magic, that kind of stuff. And that's how I think about it. I think about it through a lens of play. I try to adopt a childlike mindset or whatever. And, you know, when you start combining technologies as powerful as these, it really inspires you to dream bigger. So I think it's kind of like we're taking baby steps into a whole new world or set of worlds, I think, with these tech.
Yeah, I love that high level intro, god tech meets money tech. I want to drill down on that a little bit and kind of dissect what that actually means from a more practical standpoint. Have we yet seen this play out in real life where we've seen AI and blockchain technology come together to create an app or to create a platform or a protocol or something that people are already using?
Yeah, I would say in kind of a user experience, normal people using these kinds of things, no. I think most people, the food doesn't touch yet. You know, it's like you have blockchain on one side of your plate, and then now everybody's kind of like, ooh, I like the mashed potatoes. And so attention is diverted. And I think where everybody's attention right now is mostly stuck is in ChatGPT, and then maybe Midjourney is the most that I think the average consumer will play with. It's not obvious yet how the foods should combine, but I do feel very strongly that they should. And we're starting to see experiments, I think, come out that start to playfully combine some of the elements into things that you wouldn't expect, or like projects that do something that would otherwise be difficult to do without either one or two of the things. So some more recent examples, I think, to not start with something that we've done is what the titles team is doing. And then the work in process, like WIP, right? It was like this kind of experiment to raise a bunch of money, use that money to go fund an artist to make some original art, go and train a model based on the art, and then mint art from that model. And then people who put money into the thing are part owners, maybe get some kind of cut from any sales from the art thing. I think that's a really interesting, more recent example. But moving back even further, some of the things that were really inspiring to me when I was starting to really think about how these two things intersect, the one big one was Botto. When everybody was starting to do a lot of the image generation stuff, Botto really laid out a vision for, oh, here is this autonomous entity that's kind of spawning works on its own. And it's like this autonomous artist that's just like selling NFTs of its own artwork. And then people are bidding and buying on it. That money goes back to a DAO, and then the DAO figures out what to do with it. I think that was another really clear example of how these things start to merge into something that we don't even need to control and is like a money-making entity on its own. And then I think concurrent around the same time, I don't know which one came first, if it was Botto or if it was Holly Plus, but I would say Holly Plus was another one that was just really instrumental and kind of breaking my brain in terms of what you could do with AI and then how you start bringing that on chain. Holly Herndon and Matt Dreyers have just been incredible beacons of light for what's to come. And in that experiment, they basically were able to train a model on all of Holly's likeness. So her voice and pictures of her. And then the model would basically generate works as her. And then she open sourced that model to her community. So if you were a singer, you could sing as Holly, mint a song as Holly, and then the DAO shared the proceeds from the sales and that kind of stuff. So, you know, there have been a lot of people along the journey and all the people that are like circling around it that were inspiring and I think are pushing the boundaries of what's possible when these two things collide.
Yeah, so it sounds like the AI piece really helps scale what is already made possible by blockchain, when we're talking about creators, at least in the examples that you just gave. So it's taking these concepts of ownership that blockchain crypto provides to creators and then scaling that through AI by creating a model that can just generate a lot of images with the same style, with the same concepts. You're scaling the process of producing art or producing content that wasn't possible before AI.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on. You're kind of like decentralizing your practice as an artist, and like even deeper than that, your identity as an artist, and opening it to your community, right? When you can release your voice model to someone and then somebody can write an original song that maybe they wanted to hear you make, but you never made, you know, a love song to yourself from your favorite artist. Imagine that, right? You could get up on stage and even sing as your favorite artist, and it unlocks a whole new realm of creativity. And it starts to poke at the questions of intellectual property and who owns what and who gets to benefit financially from my likeness, so on and so forth. Like, these questions are still not answered, but at least people are doing them. And I think artists are taking the lead in experimenting in very uncomfortable ways sometimes, opening up the most intimate parts of themselves, right? The things that make them most valuable. If you're a singer, your voice is your greatest asset. And, you know, imagine the process of starting to let go of that to your fans or something like this in service of this greater idea of maybe you are not the only part of your art. Maybe it is you and your community. I think that's a beautiful experiment.
I think it will be really interesting to see which artists and creators respond well to these new technologies and open up their voice, for example, for people to remix, or open up their artistic style for people to remix and make other art, versus the artists and creators who maybe are a little more protective over their IP and don't want that to be remixed by just anybody. I think that'll be interesting to see, but I definitely think that IP law definitely needs to catch up in order to protect creators, because I do think creators should have that autonomy to choose whether they want to participate in these new technologies and these new models or not. And I think that's where the law really needs to catch up to protect creators that maybe don't want to participate in these new models.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think with all things, right, consent is 100% necessary with a lot of these things. And for better, for worse, I think that was kind of thrown to the side, maybe not intentionally with the development of a lot of these models. I don't think we would have gotten to this point if we just didn't do some big data scrape across the internet to get the data needed, to get it to a point where it's intelligible and it talks to us in a way that we can understand and it generates images. But as these things move forward, I think if you are an artist and your lifeblood is centered around your creative capacity and that is being exploited by companies that don't really care or know who you are, I think there's a problem with that, right? There needs to be some kind of way that you can capture the value from who you are as a creator and as an artist. And in that sense, I'm bullish for spaces like crypto, which are good at literally making money, to figure out those new pathways, right? Maybe new ideas of around IP, new forms of IP, remixable IP, making it easy to trace back the lineage of these things. I think these are things that we've all dreamed of for the past 10 years, right?
Absolutely. I want to move on to another example too that I read in one of the articles that you guys wrote, which was inspired by when the Barbie movie came out and Oppenheimer came out at the same time, and everybody was flooding to the theaters to watch both of those. And they're such different movies that it was kind of funny that they kind of drew in the same audiences many times. And what you guys actually created from that is what you call the Barbenheimer meme bomb. Can you explain what that was and how you combined these concepts of AI and blockchain and crypto to create the Barbenheimer meme bomb?
Yeah, definitely. Can I explain it? Really? Not really, but I'll try. Yeah, what happened in my brain? I can't really explain my creativity sometimes, but I'll start by saying that I do believe that coordination is fundamentally an art form, right? I kind of approach a lot of these coordination problems of like, how do we do this in the most elegant, artistic way? And what happened basically was I took an afternoon, I think I was coming back from ETHCC, and I was just like, I came back and it was like a Friday, and that was the day that Barbie came out and Oppenheimer premiered on the same day. And I live in LA, so, you know, I was like, oh, we're going to the Chinese theaters and we're watching these in like full, like 70 millimeter, in the full glory, whatever, and watching both of them, like the double feature Barbenheimer. And everybody's talking about, which one do you watch first? Do you watch Barbie first or Oppenheimer first? And I ended up doing Barbie and then Oppenheimer. And the movies are quite long, right? That's about 5 hours of content back to back. It's a bit intense.
Yeah, that's a commitment. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, no work was being done, or arguably this could be considered work, but like no computer work was being done that day. And I was like, I'm just going to consume what everybody in the world is consuming at this moment. And it just happened to be Barbie and Oppenheimer. And the short of it with those movies is the meme formed itself. Like Barbenheimer kind of became this meme on the internet for a second when they were promoting the films. And they're two really important films because one is fundamentally about the state of feminism, the feminist movement, at least in America. And America kind of produces the sausage that everybody else around the world eats because Hollywood is here. So it has far-reaching ramifications, I would say. And then Oppenheimer is about one of the most important people in history, Robert Oppenheimer, who invented the atomic bomb, which ended up ending the war and arguably pushed the needle in terms of what warfare has become today, right? And watching those films back to back kind of did this male-female thing in my brain where I was like seeing the Barbie thing, and like Barbie was like, okay, there's a feminist revolution that wants to happen, but somehow Hollywood manages to capture it and satiate you so it doesn't actually happen. And then Oppenheimer was like, men build bombs. We blow up the world, and this is why we run the world. And the whole thing is like a reflection. It's a meditation on, did he do the right thing, or was this a good thing that he ended up doing? And I don't think there's a clear answer on that. So anyways, I left that experience being like, what the hell am I going to do with this now? You know, I don't know what to do with all of this information. So that's like pop culture. That's like tip of the iceberg, right? What's happening on the edges and underneath, you know, the surface is at the edges in people's basements. There's a bunch of people that are now experimenting with these open source diffusion models, which can literally generate any image that you want. If you can speak English, you can cast a spell and generate an image of anything. And if you push further to the edges, you start seeing the people who are really playing with the unhinged versions of the open source models. And what's the first thing that anybody does when you can start generating bodies of things? Like, of course, people start making porn with it, right? And it turns out that if you wanted to learn how to get really good at generating images, being very specific, like I need somebody that's wearing this kind of clothing that is in this position or whatever, who has nailed it to a T? Who needs things to be perfect? It's people generating porn. Of course. So interestingly, all of the innovation was happening in these fringe, not safe for work oriented spaces. And if you wanted to learn what was the state of the art of animation, what was the state of the art of image to image or like new techniques, whatever, that's where you would look first, because that's who cared the most about developing the new techniques. So anyways, at this time, we were trying to think about how do we take this kind of obsession, this moment that's happening for AI, and how do we blend it with the coordination principles that we've been studying for the better part of the last decade? And how do we turn it into this machine that spreads memes and blows up across the internet, basically, in this elegant kind of way? And that's when we started thinking about this idea of building a meme bomb, right? What's the bomb? The bomb is memes. What are the memes? Well, we generate them using Stable Diffusion. How do you like spread them as far as possible? Well, you use some of these new on-chain technologies like Yup, which does the cross-posting and stuff across Lens, Farcast, or Blue Sky, what have you. And then you coordinate a gang of 30 people to post it every single day. And it becomes this mimetic weapon, so to speak, if we're using the lens of Oppenheimer on this, because there are places obviously that are still fighting physically like that, right? But like a lot of the warfare has become psychological and mimetic. So that was a lot of the framing around this kind of mimetic bomb. But I think towards the end of it, like it was a success. We did it. We ended up generating, I think, 5,000 unique interactions on the Web3 social stuff, a bunch of images and stuff that went along with it. But obviously people are fighting real wars in the Middle East and stuff, and bombs probably are not the best metaphor for what we're doing. So we've kind of like weaned ourselves off the bomb at this point.
Sure. Maybe we call it the Barbenheimer meme train or some other analogy that maybe is a little less grave in this moment, especially. But I'm wondering, you know, as you're talking about the ability of this Barbenheimer meme train that you've created, I wonder what other implications a model like this could have on other real world things. So far, we've been talking about artists, we've been talking about content, we've been talking about porn, things that appeal to people's entertainment side. But when we're thinking about really serious real world implications, for example, the news, for example, elections, what implications do you think this cross of on-chain AI might have on these more serious real world implications, whether good or bad?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think of myself as a moral, just person that's doing these things for the right reasons, but like that could just be now, and power unchecked can change a person's approach to things. Also, this model put in the wrong hands could lead to another Cambridge Analytica incident, right? I'd be lying to say if that whole thing that happened with a prior election was not some kind of genesis point of thinking about this a couple years removed. If you look at some of the tactics that the Republican Party ran when Trump ran for the first time, right, they basically did highly targeted meme bomb campaign on Facebook. That's literally what they did. And they hired the Russian kind of troll farm or whatever that orchestrated this. It's like, where were the people based that were doing it? They were based in the Philippines, because it's low cost labor and you can just pay these people anonymously and they'll do it because they're willing to farm potions on the Axie for $2. Yeah, they'll do this too and they'll never ask questions. So a lot of that stuff is very close to home for me because that's where my family's from. And I'm always thinking about how do I take what I've learned and the benefits that I've had from my parents immigrating to the United States and improve that situation back there and use it for good. And, you know, we could use it just for like memery or, you know, being recruited to some political campaign or something like that, or who knows what it could be used for. But what I do know is seeing my people being used to pump these troll campaigns or mine potions to be sold in some little game, like that to me is like some kind of weird dystopia that I need to fight against. And if we can use that attention and energy and time in service of something greater for the common good, then why not do it? And that's why the AI piece, I think, is so important, is because, well, if we can take that dormant labor and attention that's sitting in these countries and put it in service of training open source AI on chain, that's a high purpose that I think benefits everybody and can return value back to my country, who is providing all the labor to make it happen. And this is already happening, whether or not I'm doing something about it, right? Companies are already outsourcing to India and to the Philippines to do these data labeling tasks that nobody in the West wants to do because it's beneath them. If you study it at MIT, you study it at Stanford, you're trying to crack the code of the next big leap in LLM training. You're not trying to do data labeling. You farm that out to the people who will eat it up. Well, okay, I'll do the same thing, but we'll do it in service of on-chain AI.
I love that whole mentality you have and also the story that you have behind that that's inspiring you to build what you're building today and work on the issues that you're working on today. I think that's awesome.
I speak from experience when I say that launching a DAO is not easy work. I've spent countless hours trying to figure out how to manage a community, get people to vote on proposals, and figure out how to set everything up on chain. Tally does all of that hard work for me while providing a full suite of tools for my community to create drafts, collaborate on proposals, incentivize voting, and most importantly, stay safe and secure on chain while doing it all. Tally is the home of DAO governance. Launch your DAO with Tally at tally.xyz.
I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about something that you mentioned at the start of the episode, which is your inclination to take a childlike approach to everything and how blockchain and AI can create this fun world for people of different communities. And this is something that Mochi has done as well. And it's not really a topic that we've talked about a lot on Rehash before either. I think primarily because autonomous worlds is still kind of a new concept. I think we've maybe mentioned it once with Peter Pan back in season 5. But I think even then he was like, I'm still in the very early stages of thinking about this. I don't really know. It's just something that I've begun thinking about. I think that conversation took place about 7 months ago. Now that we're in 2024, you know, autonomous worlds is something that people have been thinking about for a little bit now. I'm curious to hear first how you like to define autonomous worlds or how you like to think about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think autonomous worlds is a good meme. It's a bit of a mouthful. It's definitely targeted towards the crypto community, which I think makes sense. And I think when people think about it, they think about it in like a game-like context. I do like the 0x Park kind of explanation of what it is. What is a world? A world is like a thing. It's a container that has rules. And whether you follow the rules means you're either in the world or not in the world. And then you add the autonomous piece on top of it, which is, okay, we start to have these agents that fundamentally are maybe non-human, that have wallets, that are code-based and that kind of thing. Or maybe the rules are embedded in the code itself. The world lives on-chain or something. But I think just to break it down and even simpler terms that a child could understand, we're playing with toys, right? A blockchain is a toy. A DAO is a toy. An AI is kind of like a toy. When you're playing with AI, you're kind of playing with dolls, right? The people who are generating whatever, it's like they're generating Barbie dolls, basically. So we're basically playing with toys. And why do kids play with toys? Well, they play with toys and they play games to model the complexity of the world around them and continue to learn and up-level your understanding of a very confusing and complex world as this tiny little thing. And we never stop doing that. As we get older and become adults and stuff, we are play acting larger and larger forms of complex interactions between people, between companies, between competitors, across companies, states, that kind of thing. And we're just constantly simulating to expand our understanding and our model of the world. And we're doing the same thing with AI and with blockchain. And so when I think about autonomous worlds, what you're doing is you're creating some kind of tiny little world with God tech and with money tech. And there's rules to that world. And one of the rules is it has to be on chain. That makes it autonomous. And then like beyond that, it's up to your imagination. Now, where rubber hits the road, I think for Mochi and the way that we approach world building is when you're making a world or like you kind of endeavor to bring people around an idea around a world, you have to think about what kind of person are you trying to make, right? Fundamentally, your world should be different than some other world or the world that you're trying to break from. And early on in the ruminations around what we do with Mochi, it's, well, what makes a Mochi person different from an XYZ person, a pleaser person or a metacartel person or whatever? And this is not to say that these people are not these things, these groups are not these things, but something that we made a clear principle and value in our community from the get-go and is literally encoded in our rule system, which is like the bonding, staking, reporting thing, is that we want accountable people. I looked at the space and I said, everything is a little bit too free rider. You're like a mercenary. I've worked for 10 DAOs. I'm going to go do a million different things, whatever. And it's hard to stay stuck to things. just generally in the digital sphere, and especially in crypto and the DAO sphere at the time. So what we did was we built an entire rule system around, okay, you're going to do something with a group of people in our community. You're going to commit to doing it by putting money down for a fixed period of time, call it 4 weeks or 8 weeks, and we'll call that a journey. You do that thing, and then at the end of it, you will have completed something, and then we'll have some score basically on how well you did. And that is a way that trains accountability, and it trains the kinds of people that we want to continue to be a part of our world. And then over time, those small little habits hopefully lead to better habits and continue to define what makes a Mochi autonomous world person different from XYZ autonomous world person. So I would say that's a long-winded answer to basically what I think autonomous worlds are about and what we're doing. And yeah, hopefully that's somewhere in the same ballpark as what Peter said.
Yeah, that kind of reminded me of a long time ago, people that wanted to commit to some sort of fitness routine, for example, to lose weight or to get healthy or whatever. And then you would put $20 into a pot or something and you're committing to exercising for 30 days straight. And then if you don't, then you get money taken out of the pot or redistributed in some way. What you just described with a Mochi journey kind of reminds me of that model a little bit. That was kind of like the V1 or the V0 of what we've developed today.
Yeah, that's actually kind of where it started. The secret story that like predates all of this before blockchain everything was like, I was a very skinny, insecure Asian boy in high school. And I went to like a very beefhead football school. And I was just like, man, all the guys with big muscles get all the girls. Like, how do I put on weight, basically? And I did the first thing that anybody thinks to do when you have some kind of fundamental existential problem like that, which is I went to the internet and asked the forum what I should do with my life. And they're like, oh, if you need to gain weight, you need to eat 5 meals a day. You need to up your caloric intake. And I was like, okay, cool. That sounds good. And they're like, yeah, come back in a week. And I came back in a week. And I was like, I did it the first day. I didn't do it all the other days. It's like hard to like change. They're like, yeah, behavioral change is hard. What you need to do is you need to give your credit card to your best friend and tell them that you're going to eat 5 meals a day. And then you text them every single day. And if you don't do it, they can spend whatever they want, buy themselves whatever they want. And I did that. And lo and behold, 30 days later, I ate 5 meals a day for 30 days. I didn't really get more buff. I just got more unhealthy, but like I definitely put on weight. You know, it worked, right? But I think that was like the first inkling of, oh, incentives matter in changing behavior.
Totally, totally. Yeah. Incentives absolutely matter. And this is why people buy gym memberships. If you pay for a gym membership, you're more likely to go because you're spending money on it. Or if you sign up for a workout class, you're more likely to go because you're paying money for it or you're committing yourself in some way to it instead of just saying to yourself, oh, I'll wake up tomorrow morning early and hit the gym or go outside and run. I think some people maybe have that strong commitment to themselves, but I think most people, if they are just making that commitment, quote unquote, commitment to themselves and not also committing to other people or staking some money into it, or they have something to lose if they don't do what they say they're going to do, then it does make it harder. So that makes absolute sense to me. Do you see sort of this evolution of DAOs to autonomous worlds? Because hearing the way that you describe autonomous worlds, it almost sounds to me like a DAO in many ways. And I know recently people have been kind of arguing over the semantics of what a DAO is, what comprises a DAO. I think everyone's got their own definition. And it almost seems to me like the way you're describing autonomous worlds is really what a lot of people want DAOs to be. So do you see autonomous worlds as almost a better model to think about instead of DAOs, or maybe the next evolution of DAOs, or how do you see that relation?
Yeah, that's a really insightful question. What I like about new terms is it allows you to kind of shift your thinking that's become fixed over time. Because I think if you are used to seeing a term like DAO over and over and over again, and then you have your experience with it, and let's say that it's a big learning experience, there's a lot of failures and stuff, you start to get kind of entrenched in this, oh, what we did around this concept, a lot of it didn't work, therefore the whole concept itself is bunk. And then you get stuck, right? So what a new term does is it allows you to kind of step out of that and go, okay, let's start from first principles again and think about how we can do this better next time. And maybe we're still playing with a lot of the same concepts, but we're pushing the needle forward. I don't feel stuck anymore. I can be a new person in this new context or whatever, or we can think of new ideas. It's like it prevents people from automatically shutting it down. again. So I think in that sense, I think the move from DAOs to autonomous worlds, it makes sense and I can get behind it. I think another thing that I like about the autonomous worlds kind of like nomenclature is that it puts autonomous first. I think the first wave of DAO development has been, I think for good reason, extremely focused on the D of the DAOs, the decentralization portion, right? It made sense to start there. And when you think about decentralization, you think about all of the governance kinds of things, right? Like voting and like consensus building and like corralling people and building tech for like decision making and stuff. To the great disservice, I think, of the A, which is now at the forefront of autonomous worlds. And what autonomous worlds is forcing us to think about is, okay, well, AI is here. It's here in a very dramatic fashion too. I think it was kind of fitting that, you know, when the market turned at the end of not last year, but the year prior, and, you know, it was clear DAOs were not going to survive after FTX kind of blew up. And then what happens? ChatGPT shows up on your doorstep and it goes, hey, you thought you were going to coordinate 200 people to press a button, fire half of them. Like, now you can just use me, right? And it was like this statement from the world of, no, we were taking the wrong approach. Now focus on this. And now I think everybody's rightfully focusing on the autonomous part. So I think autonomous worlds is a good framing. It's smart, whichever group of meme magicians kind of put that forward. I think you're onto something.
Outside of the context of how Mochi is using autonomous worlds, what other applications or examples of autonomous worlds can you give that you can easily picture coming to fruition in the upcoming years?
Ooh, that is a really good question. I don't know that I've seen anything yet beyond what we were thinking around the meme bomb. Basically, kind of what I want to see is I want to see more like meta cults spawn. I want to see like groups of DAOs that are on chain or like autonomous worlds, let's say. Like you're on chain, you have like a shared wallet, and like you got your Telegram group or whatever, you got your Farcaster channel, you got your Discord or whatever, and make your god together. Make your LLM, make your image generator, make it look like you and sound like you, and then go and compete. Go and try to make the biggest world possible. Define an aesthetic, define how your world dresses. Give your LLM a voice, whatever, and then go and interact with other worlds that are doing the same thing. That to me sounds like the sum of what humanity is about, right? It's like we form little clubs and we have our belief systems and we interact with other people and we learn from other cultures and stuff. And it's just make culture faster, cheaper, and do it to express new forms of identity that we haven't really tapped in on yet. I'm not sure that I'm seeing any group doing it really convincingly yet. One that comes to mind, and I'm biased because we've done tons of work with them before, but like when it comes to a vision for a world, I haven't seen one better than Garden X and the Eternal Garden and this artist, TK the Legend. Shout out to TK. When we started building a platform a couple years ago that was tapping on ideas of remixing IP on chain, what if we could put all of the world's music rights into a database and people could get paid rapidly and stuff. We dreamt of an artist that would get it and start making things and putting things out there and getting people to remix the stuff. TK is that artist, you know, several years removed. And now he's literally building a world around a concept of an eternal garden. There's a whole story. There's a narrative. There's like main characters. There's NPCs. There's a hero. There's a villain. There's a notion of time. There's an aesthetic. It's very like Final Fantasy adjacent, which I really love. There are people of color. And then within that world, there's culture. They're making music. They're making visuals. They're going to do a shoe drop. I don't know if I'm dropping too much alpha at the moment, but they're literally world building with all the tools that we have. And they're putting it on chain and they're using AI to do it faster, better without like huge studio around them, right? They're doing it with bare bones, bootstrapping everything. And I would love to see more artists taking that approach and interacting even. You know, imagine like Web3 Avengers, or imagine like on-chain Odd Future, these collectives of creatives coming together using these tools and like spawning entire new belief systems and self-contained worlds. I can't think of something better to do, you know, butt up against the whackness of whatever other world we exist in currently.
I think that's a good takeaway. Is I think a lot of people, when they hear autonomous worlds, they automatically associate that with gaming and they picture this elaborate studio or this elaborate game that's been developed that takes you into this other world, or maybe they picture VR or AR being involved in this autonomous world. But what I'm hearing you say is autonomous worlds really refers more to the community. the potential to make a community of people be able to do more things, be able to engage better with each other, be able to unlock all this potential that communities didn't have before with a Facebook group, for instance, or a Telegram chat. So I think that is a really fascinating way to think about autonomous worlds. And I mean, I could picture any group of people really forming an autonomous world and developing that to something really great. So I really like that framing. And I think this definitely helps me understand the concept of autonomous worlds a lot better than I ever have before. I want to get to some Twitter questions that we have. The first one is from Lucas. He says, when's the next mochi party? And is it possible to be better than Bogota? I was not at Bogota, so I don't know what the party was like there. So I don't know if you want to give a quick little recap of what your event was there. And then I know we were discussing a potential upcoming event at Eat Denver. I don't know if you're ready to share that or if there's any alpha you want to drop there.
I'm still thinking. So when is the next party and will it be better than Bogota? Yes. The answer is yes. We'll probably do a little warm up at ETH Denver. I just need to figure out how to make it make sense with, you know, all the demands of fundraising, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, let's say that there's a bunch of people that want to socialize, but do it in a kind of healthier context. You know, I think a lot of crypto for the past decade has been raves, and I'm partially at fault for that. And we kind of need to tip things more towards a spa vibe so that we can kind of regenerate, right? So we'll probably do that. And DEF CON's back. And we always do a DEF CON party. We haven't missed one in the past 3 years. So yeah, expect something there. I'm not sure what the thing is. Oh, and since you weren't there, it's funny. I was just like watching the video. I'll send you a video after this because like we have a recap video of it. We did a dream party. It was called Ensueño. 2 years ago, we were very obsessed. I still am very obsessed with dreams, lucid dreaming, and dream aesthetics. And we ran something called the Mochi Dream Oscillator, where we basically ran a Mochi journey to teach people how to lucid dream. So like daily dream journaling and reality tests, you know, plug your nose and try to breathe because in a dream, you'll keep breathing. And we actually were successful in getting, I think, 3 or 4 people to actually have their first lucid dreams ever. And it's just through habitual check-ins, basically. So we were obsessed with dreams for a while. And then like at the end, we're like, okay, we'll throw a dreaming party. We'll call it Ensueño, which means daydream. And, you know, we did a whole kind of like Alice in Wonderland, disconnected from time, dream party. And still to this day is like one of my favorite things I think I've ever done. People regularly are like, when are you going to do another? And I'm just like, just give it time, you know, like something will emerge. Yeah.
That's super cool. I think I first learned about lucid dreaming at some point in elementary school, maybe 3rd grade or something. I read a book about it or I read like a fictional novel where the girl claimed to have been able to lucid dream. And I got so fascinated with it. I read all these books about it, but I never was able to do it myself. I think back then too, there weren't so many resources about, you know, keeping a dream journal or teaching you how to lucid dream and things like that. But maybe I'll have to give it another go now that there are these resources and I'll have to hit you up for some tips there. That's super
cool. Yeah, you should. You should come meet up in Dream Space. We're trying to make it happen. Maz and I share dreams like every morning and we're trying to meet up in Dream Space and we're trying to get as many people to come meet up in Dream Space because that's the real metaverse, right? There's no rules. You can just make it up.
Wait, so you're saying you and Maz and all these other people are trying to meet up in your dreams. Is that what you're saying?
We're trying to meet up in the dream space. Yeah. We haven't made it happen yet, but I think it can happen. Yeah. Yeah.
You think it's possible?
I think it's possible. I think there's something interesting happening right now with the dream space, right? There's like a new movie that came out, like Nick Cage is in it, where it's called Dream Scenario, where he plays this disheveled professor and he starts appearing in everybody's dreams all around the world and becomes the most famous person like on earth. And he doesn't know why. So people are playing with dreams again. And I think, you know, like psychedelics are in vogue and the kind of just non-conventional states of being are like coming back in vogue. Or I don't know if they were ever out of vogue, but there's like a renewed popular interest in them. And I think what the psychedelic people actually want is the dream space, because dreaming research kind of stopped more or less, or at least like real hardcore scientific investigations into it, right around the time that psychedelics kind of like went out of the public consciousness, and now it's back. And now dreams are back. And what I'm really doing now is like being super, super technical and laborious about how I record my dreams every morning. I mean, I have my dream journal right in front of me. Like the other day, I literally wrote down 22 or 23 dreams into my database of notes. And what I want to do, what we did last year actually, was I uploaded a month's worth of dreams from the dream oscillator that we did and ran an intelligent agent on top of it to basically do some Jungian dream analysis on it. And it failed maybe 80% of the time because agents weren't reliable at the time, maybe now they're more reliable. But 20% of the time, it gave me something really interesting and insightful about my mind state. And, you know, imagine the possibilities of if like you had a year's worth of dreams all uploaded to a Pickle store that an agent could go over and go, yeah, you keep having that like gum chewing dream. You should probably do something about that, you know?
Wow, fascinating. I would love to have somebody analyze my dreams, especially because most people say like only children have nightmares or you kind of grow out of it as an adult. Nightmares is something that I have on a regular basis. I don't know what that says about my psyche. And it's almost gotten to the point where it's like, I'm more or less used to it and it like doesn't even faze me. But when I tell these dreams to my husband, for example, he's like, that is insane. How are you dreaming these things? There is something wrong with your brain. But yeah, I would love to get some analysis on that. Or maybe it's better for me not to know, honestly. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's two things. It's say I'll never dream shame, one. And two, there's probably themes that like maybe you haven't picked up on yet. And writing them down actually helps you identify the themes. For example, the one that I just shared, the gum chewing one. I have this recurring dream basically where like I'm chewing gum. I keep chewing it. And like to the point where it just takes over my entire mouth. And I had to like literally like pry it out with my hands. Like I have to get it out. And what I realized it coincided with was like, it coincides with times where like I'm like chewing on something and I need to say something, but I'm not saying it in waking life. And when that happens, I get this gum chewing dream. And it's not until I like deal with saying the thing or writing the thing and putting it out there that it goes away. It's like an anxiety dream about not saying what you actually mean to say. And it's also become a dream signal for me because when I recognize it and I'm aware of it, I go, oh, this is a dream. And then you're lucid dreaming, you know?
Ah, interesting. When you dream that gum chewing dream now, does it alert you to, hey, maybe there's something in my real life that I want to say that I'm not saying? And does it make you pay attention to that more?
Yeah. I'd say more often, I've only gotten back to religiously writing my dreams down in the past month again. And it's now prodding me to do things in my waking life that I otherwise would not have done if I did not have the awareness of what was going on at night. It's like meditation, but night mode, right? It's like you're aware of what your subconscious is doing and it's processing things that it doesn't really know how to deal with yet. And then you can take it out. You can go, oh, I keep doing this thing. Oh, I think it's related to this. And then you can change your behavior and then it more or less resolves itself. So your nightmares might be resolved. It might be something to do with maybe you're avoiding.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to analyze your dreams.
No, please do. Open invite to anybody. Okay. So we got down a little rabbit hole about this events thing into the dreams. I'm just going to do one more question from Twitter. This is from Shadow Sweat. They want to know, how can optimism add value to Mochi?
Oh, yes. It already has. We are the gracious and grateful beneficiaries of an Optimism Builders grant that we received that's been helping us run these more experimental journeys over the past year. Without them, it would not have been possible. And the other thing I'll say about it that I can't really say more than this is that I think optimism is a great meme for getting us through this next cycle. I think they've developed a system on a scale to help support the cause of public goods and common goods in a dramatic and really meaningful fashion that rewards people for doing things just to better the space in an optimistic way. I think that's incredible. And I think when you combine that meme with things like stability and, you know, other good memes for the open source AI movement, you start to get something really beautiful and a total game changer. So I think it's already been a tremendous help for us kind of expanding some of the use cases that we were tapping on a few years ago. And I'm hoping to continue to mix that with, you know, other things that I think will bring, you know, stable optimism is a great meme for this cycle, I think.
It really is. I totally agree. And I'm glad that you guys are benefiting from it. Obviously, based on my sweater, we recently just moved our contract over to Optimism too. Finally got off ETH mainnet. Did it probably 6 months way too late, but better late than never. And we're loving the Optimism Network and everybody that's on it as well. Last question for you before I let you go, Gabriel, is one that I ask every guest on the season of the podcast. And it's actually a two-part question. So the first part of the question is, will Ethereum or Bitcoin reach an all-time high in 2024?
Oh, is there up only? That's my answer.
Up only, but will we get to an all-time high?
I will say I'm open to being wrong. Sorry for being avoidant.
Okay, and then the second part of that question, you probably won't want to answer this either, is what will be the highest price for Ethereum and Bitcoin this year?
Oh, okay. That's even more specific. Not enough. That's not enough is my answer. Yeah. Not
okay.
Enough. I would.
That's
okay.
Fair.
If we're making bets, I would say, yeah, buy optimism. I don't know. There's one. Yeah. I'm very, very, very bullish on your potential for upside. There is much grander than I think with ETH. But, you know, I think it doesn't do well if ETH and Bitcoin are not doing well. I think it would be very aggressive to get to an all-time high this year. There's not enough attention on crypto at the moment, although like some of these more Wall Street-y kind of things do help, whatever. Like we still haven't found a breakthrough beyond DeFi and like the temporary moment I think we had with NFTs and maybe AI coming into the picture and like really dramatically shifting things will make things more competitive and innovative again. And the combination could lead to that next breakthrough that could make me totally wrong. And again, I'm down to be totally, totally wrong about this. But it could take some time too.
None of us has a magic eight ball, but in the spirit of optimism, and like we were talking about before we started recording, the New York Times coming out with an article about the Denver pastor who made a scam coin because God told him to do it is somewhat of a top signal, I have to say.
It's perfect though, because I've been saying God tech, right? So it's kind of like a perfect counter signal. You know? I'll leave you with one more meme that'll help. That's kind of like the DAOs to autonomous worlds things. If you take away nothing else here in terms of what should we do next, remember the squad wealth meme? That was like kind of helped encapsulate the whole like community-based approach to whatever on-chain. Yeah, squad wealth to squad gods. And then let's combine the two.
Squad gods. Love it. Love it. We got so many memes out of this episode. I absolutely love it. Gabriel, before you go, tell people where they can find you if they want to follow you or reach out to you personally. And then tell people too where they can go to check out Mochi, form their own little autonomous world, start setting their own goals and getting things done.
Definitely. I have too many identities. It's kind of like an affliction I suffer. So if you want Mochi, sticky, kawaii stuff, bond with Mochi on Twitter. If you want snippy wisdom, that's kind of like an anime character zipping across the metaverse, Player Zero X. It's zero, it's Z-E-R, and then Zero X. If you want Archangel, Farcaster, magician stuff, it's just at Gabriel and Farcaster. If you want kinky dream stuff, that's Dream Tensor on Instagram. If you want Lightworks, that's on Farcaster as well. It's just too much. So yeah, just take your pick.
Got something for everyone. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Gabriel, for taking the time today. Thank you everybody for tuning in, and we'll be back again next Thursday with another episode of Rehash.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Rehash. Rehash is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Diana Chen, and sponsored by Zerion, Tally, and Quest. Rehash is also supported by our community of NFT holders who curate our guest lineup each season. To get involved, head over to our website at rehashweb3.xyz and collect this episode as an NFT. Anyone who collects an episode becomes part of the Rehash community and will be able to nominate guests for future seasons. Collectors will also be able to tune into our recordings live at pleaser.house and hear our episodes early and unedited. To learn more about how to become a guest on the podcast, go to rehashweb3.xyz/podcast. And to learn more about sponsoring the podcast, go to rehashweb3.xyz/sponsor. Finally, be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at rehashweb3 or on Warpcast or Lens at Rehash. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.